I'm here to tell you the world's worst dad joke. And I need to warn you, I don't think it's funny at all.
Initially, we were supposed to do this nicely and, share Jamie. And we were living near each other and she was supposed to be with each of us half of the time. And that lasted, a week.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Henkin, and with me today is my baby daddy. Even though you were not sure. I want to go back to that.
Why does this have to be a recurring theme now on the podcast? My paternal anxiety. Hello, everybody. This is Aaron Henkin, co-host of the Stoop podcast, and absolutely certainly the father of my children. Happy to be with you. And funny that you should bring that up,
yes.
Jessica, because a theme of this episode is father figures.
That's why I brought it up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just so that you could be certain.
You had a reason to bring that up again. Wonderful. So we have some amazing dad stories on the podcast this week. And the first one is from a storyteller named Craig Copeland. And I have to say about this story, it's just, there's a lot happening on a lot of different layers in this story. It's about the power of humor. It's about owning your own grief. And it's just about a remarkable, resilient guy who also happens to be a teacher for many years. I think that's all we need to say, but please enjoy this story from Craig Copeland.
I'm here to tell you the world's worst dad joke. And I need to warn you, I don't think it's funny at all. Until a year ago, I was a classroom teacher. I taught for 30 years. And along the way, I learned that teachers should help their students access prior knowledge. Now, that could mean something as simple as, at the start of class, talking about what you did yesterday in class or what the students did for homework last night. But helping them access prior knowledge could also mean, if you're doing something new in class today, connect that to the thing or things they actually know something about. So if they know about Taylor Swift or memes on TikTok or Star Wars movies, you connect this new thing to that. With that in mind, in 2005, there was a popular catchphrase in American culture, and that catchphrase was, "Who's your daddy?" See, some of you are accessing prior knowledge right now, aren't you? And the catchphrase, "Who's your daddy?" despite its use of an interrogative pronoun, was not actually a question. It was a statement that essentially meant, "I own you." So, if in 2005 I were playing basketball and someone dunks on me, the dunker might yell at the dunkee, "Who's your daddy?" And he's not asking me who my father is. He's telling me, "I'm your daddy. I own you." "Who's your daddy?" was and is a taunt. And since we're in the Wayback Machine in 2005, I'll also tell you that summer of 2005, a popular blockbuster movie was Star Wars, Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. I need to tell you that my wife, Jen, and I are Star Wars OGs, okay? I'll spare you the full details of our Star Wars bona fides, except to say that my wife, Jen, as a kid, did not have the Malibu Barbie dream house, but she did have, for her Star Wars action figures, the Star Wars Death Star with working trash compactor. I married well. But in June of that year, we had not yet seen Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, but we knew, because we're Star Wars fans and because of the saga, there were two key plot points that were going to happen in this movie. The first one was that Anakin Skywalker was going to turn to the dark side of the Force and become the evil Darth Vader. You've heard of him. And also we knew that Anakin and his wife, Queen Amidala, were going to have twins. Two characters who, spoiler alert, would grow up to become Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker. But in June of 2005, my wife, Jen, and I had not yet seen this movie because, like Anakin and Queen Amidala, we also had twins, a boy and a girl. But our twins were born terribly premature, and they passed away. Now, our daughter Lauren lived only 6 days, and our son Michael lived 10. And they spent their entire short, miserable lives hooked up to machines in a neonatal intensive care unit of a hospital. I told you this wasn't going to be funny. Yet. And yes, the whole thing's as terrible as you might imagine. And in the days after their death, I was down a beggar's canyon of grief. So deep you couldn't have reached it if you were flying in. But you couldn't reach the bottom of it if you were in the Millennium Falcon at light speed. More Star Wars references for my Star Wars people out there. And here's the other thing that happened in those days. My grief made it impossible for me to access prior knowledge of certain kinds. Because a few days after the death of our children, it was Father's Day, Sunday, June 19th, 2005. And my in-laws are great. I have the best in-laws in the world. And my father-in-law, Mike, is great. He's not Star Wars OG. And so he suggested that we go see a movie as a distraction, if that were even possible, as a distraction for what's happening. And so because I can't access certain prior knowledge at that moment because of my grief, when he suggests we go see Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, I do not say to Mike, "Mike, that's a terrible idea. That's the one where Anakin's going to have twins." Instead, I say, "Sure." So later that day, we're in the theater. It's my wife, Jen. It's me. It's my father-in-law, Mike. It's about two-thirds of the way through the movie when it hits me. Oh, shit. Queen Amidala is pregnant. That's going to be twins. And more spoiler alert, she has the twins, and then she dies of grief because her husband has turned to the dark side of the Force. And I'm sitting there with Jen, taking this in. And we were parents for like 10 days, and now we're not sort of parents. And I have this absolute moment of clarity where I realize this is and will forever be the worst day of my life. Right? It could not possibly get worse than this. Or could it? Because the movie ends, and yes, we stayed till the end. It's a Star Wars movie. We go out into the lobby of the theater, and the theater is giving away Father's Day gifts. Don't worry, it gets worse. And the girl who hands me my Father's Day gift, because I look fatherly, says to me, "Happy Father's Day." Don't worry, it gets worse. The gift is a poster, and I unfurl it. And it's a poster of Darth Vader, the Dark Father. And in the poster, Darth Vader is reaching out at me in that menacing way that Darth Vader does, you know? And because it's 2005, there's a catchphrase on the poster. Here's my terrible Darth Vader imitation. "Who's your daddy?" Father's Day 2005. Here, I brought it with me. To be fair to Darth Vader, he was totally owning me in that moment. He really was being my father, being my daddy. Now, as you can tell, I resisted the urge to throw the poster onto a funeral pyre with the ashes of my dead children. I resist the urge to throw the poster into the trash compactor of my wife's Star Wars Death Star. And instead, before I tell you what I did next, I'll tell you, the next couple years after that, things did get better for me and Jen. A couple years after the death of our twins, we had another son, and Derek's now in college. And then a few years after that, we had another daughter, Claire, and she's now in high school. But I got to tell you, that summer of 2005, nothing good happened. Except, just by chance, unrelated to any of this, I had switched schools. And so in the fall, when I hung this poster on my classroom wall, none of my seventh graders and none of my colleagues knew anything about what had happened to me that summer. And that was both a sweet relief and a narrow escape. And for the next 19 years that I was a teacher, I switched classrooms a couple times, but the poster always went with me. Up on my wall, Darth Vader, who's your daddy? I'm your father, right? And it might be fair of you to wonder why I kept a reminder of the worst day I will ever have, where I could see it every workday. And it's only in the last couple of years that I sort of figured out there were two reasons why I did that. The first reason I kept this poster on my wall is that, and here I'm going to disagree with the start of every Star Wars movie, the galaxy is not a long time ago and far, far away. It's right here, and it's right now. And the galaxy can throw a lot at me, but I'll get through it, and I'll never turn to the dark side of the Force. And the second reason I kept that poster on the wall for 19 years is that I love a good joke. And having this poster on the wall was a tremendous 19-year-long inside joke between me and Darth Vader. A dad joke. The world's worst dad joke. Thank you.
You know, there are a lot of stories at the Stoop shows that are sort of like laugh riot stories. And then once in a while, you'll get hit with a story like that from Craig Copeland, which has incredible, poignant moments of humor, but also just takes you on an emotional journey that you otherwise never would have seen coming, never would have expected, and makes it something universal that we all can take something away with us afterwards and be better people for it. I think that's one of the beautiful things about The Stoop. You are listening to an episode of The Stoop Storytelling Podcast on the theme of father figures. We have another dad story coming up for you right after the break.
So before I introduce this next storyteller, I just want to say for the listeners out there, Aaron is a great father. I just want to celebrate you for...
Oh, thanks for saying that.
Being a good dad.
My kids may agree or disagree on any given day.
Well, I think they both know that you're a great dad. And, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy being parents at all. But grateful that you're on this journey.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
You're a great mom dad.
Thank you. What's a mom dad?
Like a dad, but the woman version.
I thought you were thinking that I was also a mom to the dad.
You're a grandmother?
No. Well, yeah, I guess in that.
What else don't I know about you?
Yeah. Okay. So this next storyteller, the way that I got to know him, do you remember this? Do you know how I connected with the storyteller?
No. Did he try to ask you out on a date as well?
All right, that's referencing a past episode. I met this next storyteller because he was the interventionist for my uncle to get him to go to rehab.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so we hired him to lead the family through the intervention process. And he was so good at it. He was great. He was he found his calling as an interventionist. But this is his story about his journey with fatherhood. Take a listen.
So when Jessica first asked me to participate in this series, I looked at the list of topics coming up and I said, oh, love. I'll pick the one on love. I know all kinds of things about love. I'm, after all, almost L years old. I refuse to be 50, so I decided to be like a Roman and be L. I see some of you are very excited about that idea. But you're more Ivy League if you get that joke, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, so I started thinking about, you know, loves I've had, and then I started questioning, do I even know what love is? Have I ever really experienced love? And I guess being L, you start looking at those kinds of questions, you know? So I thought about my childhood and, you know, looked at my parents, their feelings for each other, and I thought, nah, that really wasn't love, that was more dependency. And what they showed my sisters and I was, well, wasn't love, it was some sick cousin of love that with many years of therapy might actually get to be bad love, you know? So, okay, we'll skip that whole thing and, you know, move forward and, oh, well, I was married. And, well, was the operative word there. But then I thought about my daughter, Jamie, who was part of the whole marriage thing. I thought, well, there's someone I actually can say I do love and have done a lot of things for. And the very first sacrifice, I guess, I made, and all parents know about sacrifices, is I actually delivered Jamie. And I lived in Philadelphia at the time, grew up in Philadelphia, and while my wife was in the delivery room, the obstetrician and I were scrubbing, and the Flyers game was on. That's the hockey team. And we're watching the game, and then the nurse comes out and says the baby's head is showing, so we had to, you know, interrupt the game. So I actually missed like 7 or 8 minutes of the game to deliver her. So that was the sacrifice. So I knew right then this must be something, you know. Well, for various reasons, Jamie's mom and I didn't stay together. Had nothing to do with the Flyers. She actually liked them too. Eagles was a different story. And so we broke up, and initially we were supposed to do this nicely and, you know, share Jamie, and we were living near each other, and she was supposed to be with each of us half of the time, and that lasted, oh, a week. And then things started getting ugly, and some folks know that occasionally children will be pawns through a divorce and separation. That's exactly what at least half of this relationship was trying to do here. And Jamie was not happy about it. She wanted me, or wanted to be with both of us at the time, but also didn't like not having access to me. And so after a few years of this, she had actually said, I want to come live with you. Well, being a single dad and a male trying to get custody of a daughter who at this time was probably 7 or 8 years old is not the easiest thing in the world. But I said, okay, if that's what you really want, I'll go ahead and do it. So we file papers and get lawyers and do all this, and that just began a whole new series of adventures, shall we say. The highlight of all those adventures, well, one of the highlights was spending 3 days in jail. Now, you might ask, how would that happen? Well, so we're in court, and for the judge's wisdom, he decided for various reasons that Jamie should remain with her mother. This was after three of the kids that she had abandoned from a previous marriage had testified about that, and that she even had said that if I got custody of Jamie, she would just give it all up and never see Jamie again, because if she wasn't going to get support, there was really no reason to have an involvement. And the judge, in his infinite wisdom, decided, well, since Jamie should have access to both parents, then therefore she should stay with her mother, because then he knew I would always fight to see her, and at which point, I used to be much more fly off the handle when I was, you know, not L. And so the first thing I hear coming out of my mouth before my brain had a chance to stop it was, you fucking asshole. Friends, let me tell you, If you want to get on a judge's good side, if you're ever in court, do not say that, because you will be chained and shackled in various forms, like you just murdered 12 people and be hobbling out the door. I spent 3 days in jail and had a relatively good time, actually. Beat everybody my, you know, arm wrestling and everything, and you know, was drinking wine made out of orange drink because somebody there worked in the bakery and was stealing the yeast, and so, you know, this was a great time. And what's also cool, if you go to call your friends from jail, there's a recording that says this is a collect call from a correctional institution, and they're all like, wow, how'd you do that? That's really, you know. So I'm calling everybody I know because it's not costing me anything. And the other cool thing about it is, you know, there are people in there that were like, you know, mother rapers and father killers and on the Group W bench. Those of you that are L understand that story. The younger ones may not. And they might be in there for whatever murder, rape, you know, car theft. But you tell them you call the judge a fucking asshole, you are just in a whole new category. You know, nobody messes with you. So after several days, the judge calls me back in and, you know, says, do you want to say anything to me? And I was smart enough to say, you're still, you know. And so I apologize. So this goes on and on. And eventually I fire all my attorneys because I decided they're not that bright. I can go to the law library and learn about this. And you can be really annoying to just file about once a week, you know, things with the judge until he's going to get sick and tired of me. Well, he finally did on several fun stories. But in Pennsylvania, the law says when a child gets to be at least 10 years old, he or she can make up his or her own mind. And somewhere right after Jamie's 10th birthday, she was visiting me and came down with a letter to send to the judge, which we did. And, you know, there was still some wrangling, but I guess the Christmas of her 11th birthday is when she came to live with me. And up until, I guess, last year, when she now has an apartment around the corner for me with some friends, we did it. We, you know, had a partnership, you know, as much as a partnership with a adolescent female teenage daughter and, you know, a relatively bizarre father gets along. But I guess since I only have a minute or two, we probably just say we lived happily ever after.
I mean, I love this story. I think it's a true testament to a father who just wants, who understands that the purest love that he has in his life is the love of his daughter, and that he goes to great lengths to maintain that and to be the sole parent to her, the dad mom to her, as it were.
It really does open up new chambers in your heart when you become a dad. New joys, new pains, and whole new realms of experience. And this episode really covered the spectrum of those emotions. This episode about father figures, well curated.
Thank
Jessica.
You. Thanks.
So we've arrived at the end of our episode, and this is where we let you, our listeners, know that maybe you're interested in hopping on stage and telling a story at an upcoming Stoop. If so, we invite you to let us know what kind of stories you might want to share. You can do that through a very convenient little portal at the Stoop Storytelling website, stoopstorytelling.com. And that's also where you can find all these stories from the entire 20-year archive of the show.
4,700 of them. And
amazing.
Some change. Yeah.
And going. And running.
And running.
And counting.
And counting. What a gift. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Baltimore Public Media for housing our podcast. Thank you to Maureen Harvey for your patience and direction as our podcast producer. And thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.